Welcome back to the IWA's podcast series, Wales A Work In Progress, which seeks to examine and inform the ongoing debate around Wales's constitutional and democratic future. This is part of the IWA's ongoing policy project on Wales's constitutional future, which is supported by the Legal Education Foundation. And I'm Joe Rossiter, the IWA's Policy and External Affairs Manager. Today, we're back with what should be a fascinating conversation with a very captivating person. I'm delighted to be joined by Yvonne Murphy. Yvonne is co-founder, artistic director and executive producer at Oh My Days Productions, and runs the Democracy Box and Talking Shop projects, of which we'll hear more about imminently. As well as unpicking Yvonne's projects in this conversation, we'll touch on the challenges facing democracy in Wales, what we can do to engage and educate citizens in democracy, and how constitutional change plays into this whole picture. Yvonne, so thank you and welcome.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks for being here. So Yvonne, could you talk us through really broad introductory question of what is the Democracy Box and the Talking Shop? What does it mean and what is it trying to achieve, really, I guess?
Okay. How long have you got? Thank you for having me on. It's lovely to be here. So it all really started back in 2017 when I had this idea about the Talking Shop. I'd done lots of research on the streets of Cardiff about barriers to participation in cultural activities and the arts. And I had this idea for the Talking Shop, a place where you could walk in and find out anything about what was going on in your local town and city, but also at the same time, find out information about our democracy and how it all works and fits together, because I was really interested in the intersection between cultural and democratic participation. And I thought maybe it was just me and maybe I'd be sat in this shop on my own for a month. But as it turned out, I wasn't. I was quite inundated with visitors coming in of all ages, from age 2 to 92. And 100% of visitors in that month that trial was open, which I then ran in 2019, was positive. And everyone who came in said we needed it. And I was quite overwhelmed by the need. And I started to explore in that month what we'd lost and why we needed it. And that was the starting point, really, the Talking Shop pilot in 2019.
So the Talking Shop, if we take a step back, what is the Talking Shop?
So it's a space run by artists and creatives. It's a creative space. You walk in, there's big questions painted on the walls, like what does democracy mean to you? What does culture mean to you? Why do you vote? Or what determines if you vote and how you vote? So really big questions. And the idea is that you can go in and you can have conversation with anyone else in the space. So the conversations are facilitated. So complete strangers coming together from all different walks of life, from all different political persuasions, having big conversations about the question of the day. So we choose one of the questions off the wall, or they can talk about any of the questions. Also, it's somewhere that you can just pop in to get some information. So you can pick up some leaflets about the local venues or activities, cultural activities that are happening, or you can pick up leaflets from the Senate engagement team or the Westminster engagement team, and really find out anything that you don't know about our democracy and how it works and fits together. And what I started to understand when I ran that pilot was I thought for years that I was in the minority of someone who didn't quite understand how it all worked in my 20s and 30s. And I started to understand that actually I was in the majority.
Next question. So it starts off as a kind of big open space for questions and then can kind of go in any possible direction, I guess, is the idea there. And what do the projects kind of aim to do? What is it that you are trying to achieve? And also from that initial pilot, you've gone on and done much more than that. So I'd like to hear, you know, where did you go from the pilot and what happened next, really, to where you are today?
So when I did the pilot, I was exploring two things. I was researching two things. I was researching what my next show was going to be. So I put playwrights in the space to talk to the public. But I was also exploring the concept of the Talking Shop itself and whether it was something that was needed, or, you know, something that I felt was needed. Out of that pilot, I evidenced a need for a greater basic understanding of how our democracy worked. So that led me. So I paused the Talking Shop from a while, and I went on a three-year research and development, first of all funded by Cluster, which was to look at this: how do we explain the basics of our democracy to the whole population? How do we do that? Because what everyone who came into the shop said was, where can you just show me somewhere on my phone that explains all of this stuff that you've just explained to me? You know, what the difference is between local government, devolved government and UK government, the difference between the Prime Minister and a First Minister, you know, how to find my councillor and what they do and what their responsibilities are. Where can I find all of this on my phone? And I couldn't find anywhere. I couldn't find one simple place online that explained all of the basics. So I could find Wales, obviously, because the Senate engagement team, who I was collaborating with, do a really good job. I could find stuff about Westminster, because the Westminster engagement team do a really good job. But I couldn't find one place that was just really... So I found lots and lots of videos. Yeah. That explain stuff in all over the place. So I started to collate all of that information. And I went to Cluster and said, look, I'm really interested in the public information films that I used to watch in the 70s. You know, and I remember still to dip my headlights when I'm in a dark, you know, A road because of that public information film I watched when I was about 12. So what would a public information film look like now when people don't watch telly in the same way, you know, and they watch multiple media platforms? Yeah. How could we create something so that 67 million people understand the basics of our democracy? So thankfully, Cluster said, yes, go and have a little bit of seed money. And I pulled together 10 young people from all across Wales, because remember, the pandemic hit at this point. So I was going to work with just 5 young people in a room for a week. Went by the way, but actually that was a positive, because the way I then worked with the young people, I found suited them better to work in small chunks. You know, there was no barrier to travel. I could work with young people from all over Wales. There was no barrier to them, you know, coming into a room that they would feel uncomfortable in, you know. So it's very democratic, Zoom.
So these young people online. Are these the young people referred to as, you know, co-creators, aren't they, in a lot of the projects? I think it's a really interesting part of this project, you know, that co-creation is a principle that we hear an awful lot about in Wales, especially after the Future Generations Act and the ways of working. But I feel like you've got a really good kind of best case practice of how you do that really effectively, especially with young people, to drive forward work in a particular direction that really enables those young people to take it where they want, really. So I guess I'd be interested just to hear what the process of getting those young people and making sure that what they said, and, you know, they really are co-creators. They're not kind of, you know, people you engage with on an ad hoc basis. They are really central to the whole work that you do, aren't they?
Yeah, the ladder of participation model, which is Lundy's participation model, you know, I've always worked with young people, and I always aspire to be at the top, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 rungs of that. So it is true co-creation. And what's important about co-creation is that everyone's bringing something to the party and everyone's learning. So because they are complete digital natives, you know, they're bringing stuff that I just don't know. And I didn't, you know, how could I have known how, you know, Instagram works and how, you know, I'm not 18, you know, I'm not all over social media in the way they are. So I bring something to them and they bring something to me. And basically any of the ideas that they've come up with, I try and facilitate. Some of it takes a long time, you know, some of it I facilitated really quickly, but some of it's taken 3 years before I go, okay, that idea they had in 2020, let's see how that works now. So I initially thought they might come up with one good idea, those 10. So I got them to watch loads of stuff that existed. And then I was like, how would you create or curate this differently? So I explained some of the basics, and I've missed a stage here, because I did a lot of research about story and how people get information and how narrative and story is really how we understand the world. And that's my background. I'm a storyteller. Yeah. I'm a theatre maker. So I got all the basics that we need to understand about how our democracy works, and I put it into a story format. And then I shared this story format with the young people.
Yeah.
And I was like, how would you retell this story in different ways?
Yeah.
And they came up with so many ideas. They came up with game show ideas, podcasts, music videos, drawings, illustrations. I mean, they blew me away with stuff. And I was like, okay, let's take some of these and commission them so that people can start to see quite quickly the power of working with 16 to 26 year olds. So one young person said, I want to explain it through a series of music videos. So she did one test one. I shared it with loads of people. We tested it. She tested it with loads of young people. We got loads of feedback. And then the BBC commissioned that. And that's on BBC Bite Size. Mm-hmm. Another young person said, sat down. And I said, can you find your member of Senate? And after 10 minutes watching her try to do this on Zoom, I said, at what point would you have given up? And she said, after 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, how would you want this information? Where would you find it? And she said, I'd find it on TikTok. I was like, okay, how would you do it? And she made a TikTok post all about how to find your member of Senate. So when we worked with more young people, at the top of where platforms they used was TikTok. So I was like, right, okay, let's start there. Let's start with Instagram, which was another one. Let's start with YouTube. So I basically did lots of research and found out where they were.
Yeah.
And then they did the work of retelling the story on those platforms.
And these
another was a podcast. Sorry, go on, Joe.
And these 10 young people, they've kind of been there as co-creators throughout the process, or is there kind of a shake-up in how those 10 people are kind of constituted as part of the work?
So I started with 10, recruited them, and then in the second stage, when I got the next stage of funding from Cluster, I did an open call-out. So some of them stayed. Yeah. Some of them stayed for a little bit. So basically, I've got a rolling list of young people who are active and dormant. And some of them pop back and, you know, they tell me how they want to work. They yeah. tell me how they want to be communicated with. They tell me how they want to self-manage. So the interesting thing, I could keep recruiting. If yeah. we had the resources and the, you know, the capacity, there's no stopping how many people could be being paid. And this is key. I pay the young people to be co-creators, and I have done since the very beginning. And they get paid. At the beginning, they got paid £15 an hour. When the funding went down during one summer, they got paid £10 an hour, but they've never got paid less than that. And since I've been properly funded, they've been paid £15 an hour for every meeting they attend, for a bit of content they create. And that is key.
Yeah, I mean, because it's an exchange of information, isn't it? And value that they bring to the project as much as what you're trying to get out. You know, it's not an extractive process, is it? Like you said, it's a co-creative process. And you also have this, you know, this creative cascade model when it comes to democratic education. Could you explain what you mean by, you know, creative cascade and examples of how that works, really?
So basically, I did a lot of research with the co-creators and then with hundreds more young people. And they said there was three key things of where this information needed to be. They said the information needed to be in the public domain, as in a public information campaign. They said it also needed to be in schools. And 95% of people surveyed have said this has to be in schools, and not just in secondary schools, in primary as well. And I'm not going to go into depth about the history of democratic education in schools, but that's in my long version of my report that's coming out in September. And I'm not the only person campaigning for this. You know, there's big reports out there about the fact that it's really problematic that we're not teaching people the basics. But we're in a broken cycle of storytelling, because if you go through school and you don't learn it yourself, and then you become a teacher like me, it's really hard to teach your own subject, right? I have total respect for teachers.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to stand in front of 30 kids and do your own subject. To teach a subject you don't understand and you're not confident in about, and then to do it in a creative and engaging way, is a really tall ask. So what happens is you push a workbook across, you switch a video on, and you tick the box to say, I've covered that bit of the curriculum. So we need to shift that. We need to make sure that all teachers know the story, the basics.
Yeah.
So basically, the creative cascade model is teaching teachers what I'm doing with young co-creators.
Yeah.
So it's a very simple model, and I've trialed it with 15 schools in collaboration with Central South Consortia. And I just got amazing feedback, right? So it's not an expensive model. So we get teachers to come online and we do it in modules. And at the beginning, I teach them the story But I don't just teach it in a boring way. I teach it using the content that the young people have made. So they listen to podcasts, they watch videos, they see the story illustrated. There's loads of different, but they've also got a text version of the story.
Yeah.
And then and they meet young co-creators as well. And then I start to help them work out how they're going to do this with their students. So the first point is that they then share the story with their students, again, using the content that the young co-creators have used.
Yeah.
And then they ask the students which bit of the story they want to retell. So this creative cascade model works from year two to year 11. So obviously with the year two students, you're not going to do the whole story. You might just do the introduction. Okay. And then they ask them how they want to creatively retell it. And the teachers, like me, were blown away with how many different creative ideas their pupils had. So they made puppet shows, they made short films, they wrote songs, they made music, they did illustration, they did mind mapping. I mean, just massive, the amount of stuff they came up with. And then the idea is that they share it with the year below. So if you're in year 11, you've written a song that explains the difference between, you know, councillors, MPs and members of Senate, you share that with year 10. Year 10 at the same, watch that, but they've been doing it themselves and share it with year 9. So on, all the way down to year 2. And the idea is that someone who's in year 2 now, who's 7 years old, in 10 years' time, to cascade every single year in school. So by the time they leave school at 11, not only will they completely understand the basics of our democracy, but they'll have also developed all their creative habits of mind, you know, their curiosity and all the stuff that they need actually to problem solve all the problems that we've left with them.
Yeah, I think that kind of works quite well with how the new curriculum in Wales is meant to empower teachers to teach the pupils that are sat in front of them, not just a, you know, theoretical class that exists and is the same across Wales, but is really kind of situated in what the experiences are of the children and the co-creation principles you spoke about as well. And like you said, as with all this work, the creative methods and co-creation underpin the whole lot of it, doesn't it, really? So I want to zoom out a bit, because I think, you know, I've heard you speak before and you have a really clear articulation on what, because of the amount of engagement you've done with young people and people of all ages in the talking shops as well, around what the big problem is with democracy in Wales today. You know, you've described how there's a kind of democratic deficit in Wales, and you know, we all feel it. That's why there's so many electoral reforms coming up. But from where you sit, with all the experiences you've had, all the conversations with people who are often in situations like, you know, the think tanks or the academics or the politicians don't tend to have the kind of in-depth, high-level conversations that you've had that are really situated in people's lived experience. So from where you sit, what are the key challenges facing Wales's democracy? Is a big question, but I think you're good at articulating what the problem is.
The most basic problem is that the majority of people don't understand how our democracy works and fits together. And how can you say that you have a democracy if the majority of citizens don't understand how they can participate beyond the ballot box?
Yeah.
And actually, that's the key, because our focus as a society is all around elections. And that is actually detrimental to people participating in elections. And I know that sounds confusing, but people are literally saying to me, why bother voting? Why am I going to come to the ballot box? I don't even know what I'm voting for. So just to give you some stats, and I know stats aren't really useful, but in all the surveys that we did, 95% of people think it should be taught in schools. 80% don't know who their member of Senate is. 80% don't know who their member of Senate is or what a member of Senate does.
Well, let alone when you get into, you know, you've each got, you know, your 5 Senate members rather than one as well.
Absolutely. And 60% don't even know what devolution is.
Yeah.
You know, or what's devolved. And then you've got 70% wanting more information on the basics of our democracy.
Yeah.
And 90%, this is my most shocking statistic, don't know who their councillors are or what their councillor does. And yet everyone I speak to really cares about their local area. You know, they really care. So that's a massive mismatch. So the main barrier is this basic information, but we've got a barrier to everyone getting this basic information, which I've named the ivory tower problem, which is basically everyone who has this information, or the majority of them who are in positions of power, literally don't understand that the majority of people don't understand this information, don't understand the basics. You know, and I'm talking absolute basics. So what we have is a focus on getting people out to vote, getting people registered, you know, and the mechanics and reforming. But before you do any of that, you have to bring everyone with you and you have to explain the basics to them. So the ivory tower problem is, and at the root of the ivory tower problem, I suspect, is a second problem, which is the managed democracy problem, which is a, that's a big claim, but actually, if you're the managed democracy could just be described as poor information flow in a society and a subsequent lack of opportunity for people to get involved between elections.
Yeah.
So, and my concern is that the managed democracy comes down to some people not actually wanting people to understand the basics.
I think, and it's easy to kind of say, well, there's a large cohort of people who don't vote, therefore they're not engaged with what is going on in their local community, and that couldn't be further from the truth. And I think that's where the beyond the ballot box really comes into, isn't it, is that actually there's a missing gap in information from where people say, yes, I really care about my community, but I don't think that voting speaks to ways in which I can transform my local area or my community, isn't it? Is that, it's that bridging that gap, which we kind of spoke about in the IWA report that came out of the roundtable as well, is that there is a need to zoom out from the ballot box and think about and recognize that lots of ways that people engage in their community is a form of democracy, isn't it? And it's civic participation that goes much broader than the ballot box.
And this is really key. And this is in the story, the Democracy Box story. And we've got 10 ways to get involved. And right at the bottom of that, 9 and 10, is registering to vote and voting. At the top of that is having a conversation with your neighbours and with your family. And because what I've learned is that the vast majority of people who don't understand and who are disenfranchised from our democracy are not just young people. They're anyone who hasn't had that kitchen table, dining room table conversation growing up. Yeah. So if you don't come from that privileged place where you have that conversation, you know, you're then not going to have that conversation with your children, and you know, and that cycle will carry on. So actually how we break that is really important.
There's
other barriers, though. It's not just about the ivory tower and the managed democracy. There's also the news and media problem, which goes back to, you know, and there's three problems in that. One, our main focus in for the media and the news is around elections, so that's problematic. The other thing is how we tell stories in our news. So we tend to tell them about the individual rather than the collective. And the third problem is trust. So the trust and truth were two of the key words that came up throughout all of my research. I don't know who to trust and I don't know where to find the truth. And the problem is now we're so saturated with information, it's hard for people to distinguish between information that they feel they can trust and that is factual. So the Democracy Box signposts everyone to the Electoral Commission.
Yeah.
Because, and they need to be raised, their profile needs to be raised as a place for that anyone can get factual information about how to vote and how elections run, but also about how our democracy runs. And just to go back to your point about democracy being more than the ballot box, I use an example. Whenever I work with a new young co-creator, I tell them about a little patch of ground that is at the end of my street, and that it was just overrun and it had brambles and everything on. And a few neighbours got together and said, you know, can we clear this? Can we do something with this? And they started a gardening club and they contacted all the neighbours and, you know, invited people to get involved. And then they were like, actually, we could get some planters for here because the local town council are giving out planters to all the businesses and stuff. So they got some of those. And then they went to the big council, to the county council, and they got some funding and they commissioned an artist. And then they put some sculptures in. And now that's a place of tranquility where people who walk up a big hill to get to where I live can sit and rest. But also it's a place where the community gathers and congregates. That's democracy right there. That's democracy in action. Yeah. And that is what I explained to you. And it's great when young people suddenly get it and they have an aha moment. They go, oh, God, my local post office is closing. Can I do something about that? And we're like, yeah, what do you want to do about it? And, you know, but when they brainstorm, and by the end, they're like, oh, I could start a petition. You know, I could do a protest, actually. I could write to my local, you know, representative. That is democracy. Working out what matters to you in your local area, in your country, in your nation, in the world, and feeling like you have a voice and can contribute all year round.
Yeah, and it's making it part of people's everyday lives, isn't it, rather than something that happens once every 5 years or at different points between UK and Welsh elections. I know there's much needed electoral reforms come into Wales, and, you know, the kind of fairly bleak picture you've painted, but in times empowering in terms of when the solutions come in. But, you know, the point where we're at in terms of people being disengaged with the political process, and these much needed electoral reforms in Wales around making the system in attempts to make democracy better and function better in terms of making sure that people's votes are, and the seats in the Senate are more reflective of what people's votes are by making it more proportional. The differences between UK and Welsh elections changing. Do you worry about what that means for an already fairly unhealthy democratic engagement levels in Wales? You know, and it seems to me a really key moment where we need to be explaining what democracy is to make sure that we reap the benefits of what those policy changes are, at least.
I'm very optimistic, actually, because in all the work that I've done, I haven't found many young people or people of any ages who don't care and who aren't interested. They are really interested and they really want to contribute and they really want to have their voice and they want to make a difference and they care about issues in their local area and beyond. And so that is incredibly encouraging. That's not bleak. No. But what we need to do is bring them with us and make sure everyone can have a voice. So that we need to build a bridge. And we've got more activism than we've ever had in the UK, not just in Wales. So we need to bridge between the energy and the passion of that activism and the slow-natured process of our bureaucratic system, of our democratic systems. We need to bridge so that at the moment people feel, rightly or wrongly, that the dialogue is very one way and it comes out of our democratic systems and speaks to them, but they don't have a voice back in. So we need to create that two-way bridge so that people can feel genuinely heard all year round. And that is going to really challenge some of our existing situation.
Yeah,
and I guess. And that's a good thing. And I think one of the main things that I always talk to young people about is democracy is not static. It's not a fixed thing. It's an idea that came long before the Greeks, and it's created by us. You know, every change that's ever happened has happened because of us, the people.
So I guess in that way, you know, these challenges to make democracy better happen at very different levels, don't they? They happen in the democratic education, they happen at policy change. So in that way, it's an opportunity as much as it is a challenge, isn't it? When these reforms take place, it's an opportunity to tell people about what the change means and why it means their vote matters. And that is an energizing thing to try and capitalize on people's energy on civic engagement, I guess, as much as anything, as is the work of the Independent Commission as well on the constitutional future of Wales. I had a broad question on, you know, the work of the Democracy Box, the work of the Talking Shop, and how you see mechanisms like the Talking Shop and the Democracy Box as how can they be used as part of our democratic process, as a kind of ongoing process to make our democracy stronger? How do you see that fitting into the way that our democracy works at the moment, really, I guess?
Well, in response to all the research and to the young people, I've made four prototypes and they are almost ready and they basically need to be upscaled. So the public information campaign that you can see now the Democracy Boxes across all social media, and it's on Spotify as well as BBC Bite Size. That just needs to be upscaled now. But I've proven it. I've done the proof of concept. It works. And that would actually be a real game changer, because if every person in Wales, let alone the UK, knows that story, that's massive. Okay. If they just know how our structure works and what the difference is between devolution and the different, you know, local government, then they will be able to have a voice. That will be a game changer. So that's the first thing. The second prototype, which is the creative cascade model in schools, again, it's tested, it's ready, it just needs to be upscaled. It's not expensive. And actually, this isn't about me or Oh My Days doing all of this. This is about, because one of the main bits of thing that I came out of the research was, you know, organizations exist, which are, and it's their role and it's their job to do this work. And that includes the BBC, it's written into their charter, that includes the Electoral Commission, and other stakeholders and parties, you know. So it's how they come together to upscale this work, you know, which should fundamentally be state funded by the devolved governments and by the UK governments. So, and the third one, I've came full circle back to the talking shop, because the young people were like, it's great that you're doing the public information campaign prototype, it's great that you're doing the schools, but actually we also want somewhere that we can walk into. We want somewhere that's face to face. After 2 years of being on screens during a global pandemic, we need that human interaction. So I was like, okay, let's work out how we put the Democracy Box inside the talking shop and trial that, because, you know, I know that it worked in Cardiff, but actually, how does it work in the valleys? How does it work in Newport? You know, what do we need to make that work? So I've been trialing that all over Wales. We've had like 9,000 visitors nearly walk through the doors of the talking shop with no marketing budget.
Yeah.
You know, but the model, I've nearly finished prototyping that model. And what is fascinating about that model is that people come into that space who are from very different viewpoints. And, you know, the whole stuff about polarization, people shift in that space. You know, so in the pilot, I had Remain voters talking to Leave voters, talking to people who wouldn't vote, talking to people who are leaving the country because of it, you know, talking to people who just come to the country. You know, where do you get that, where you can have all those different perspectives? So I'm just in the final process. I'm trying to do a final trial to work out how to make it fully bilingual, apart, amongst other things.
Yeah.
And really write the recipe for how that talking shop could exist, because the idea is with the talking shop, that's slightly different to the other stuff, to the schools and the public information, because really that needs to be about collective coming together of organizations and local authorities in that local space and running it collectively. So I'm trying to work out how that happens. And the last thing I did was create a toolkit for how to work with young people, so that anyone, and that's the only one of all the four prototypes that is commercial, that I would get some kind of income stream as a freelancer from.
Yeah. Well, you've written about in one of our Welsh Agenda magazines as well, around your kind of your vision for there to be a talking shop in every town. And I think that's a really admirable vision. And I think you clearly articulate what is a problem that happens in a lot of work in this space, where there's really good pilots, and they happen, they have a really big impact, and they change minds and they get people engaged, and then they don't scale up because the funding that is allocated to these what are transformative projects doesn't match what the potential is for their vision. So I think you're speaking to a challenge that many people have felt, really. So I think that's quite clear that if we want the democracy that we can really all be invested in, the democracy we all want to see in the next 10, 15 years, then it costs money to engage people at a certain level as well, isn't there? So I want to thank you very much for your time, Yvonne. It's been a really like whistle stop tour through absolutely everything you've got going on. And I would really, where can people check in on what you're doing? Because I know the report will come out at some point in September, but where can they keep up to date with all of the work that you're doing across all of these different streams of work?
So you can follow Oh My Days, which is spelt very strangely, O-M-I-D-A-Z-E, on social media and have a look at the website. And then there's a prototype Democracy Box website as well, where you can, and the story is free to download. It's in a PDF, so anyone can use it. And I'd really like anyone and everyone to share that resource. Yeah, and the report's coming out in September. And I think it's really important to say, I am a freelance artist and creative. Yeah. And I just want to say, it's really important that we invest in and support our freelance artists and creatives. They should be around every table, every policy making table, every public service board should have them embedded, because we bring stuff. We just think differently and we think outside the box. And we need, especially after a post-pandemic, when they freelancers in the arts was almost, you know, demolished through, you know, the lack of work that was happening then. It's really key. And I just don't want this work to fall off the edge of the table. You know, it's over 5 years really worth of work. And I want someone to, I want it to be picked up and developed.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's definitely something that we're looking forward to reading the report in full and keeping up with, you know, all the success that will come in the future with what is a really interesting and, you know, impactful pilot. So thanks, Yvonne, again for your time. If you'd like to hear more about the work that the IWA is doing on our Constitutional Futures project, then just check in with the IWA's Twitter account, which is at IWA_Wales. And we also have a range of different events coming up in the autumn, winter 2023 and 2024. As well, so keep your eyes peeled there and you will get all of the latest information. But thank you once again, Yvonne, for joining us, and yes, look forward to seeing what happens next.
Thanks, Joe, it's been really lovely chatting to you.